Welcome to the Kings Road Podcast. I am your host, the Aries Justin Yontz, and I'm here with my co-host,
City Saint. What's up?
And I'm doing good. And we are here to change your view on professional wrestling. We are the Kings Road Podcast. And what do we have in store for you today? We're talking Stone Cold Steve Austin, specifically 1996.
Around this time, we get, in my opinion, the greatest split screen segment of all time. You go ahead. I'll give you this one.
Wait. Are we at?
Yeah.
Does the split screen? Yeah, the split screen. Yeah. Right before. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. No. This is. Well, not just the split screen. Let's talk about, he's in the studio and then they show Doc Hendricks, who's Michael Hayes, for all those who know who the hell he is. What a stupid catchphrase name. But anyways, that's beside the point. He's running down the Survivor Series card. You got Austin coming in and he's like, what are you talking about? Why am I here? Are you flying me all the way here from Texas? And I'm here and it's like, oh, Bret Hart's in his home of Canada. And they show Bret Hart. He's petting a cat. I mean, I'm gonna be honest. Austin should have been right there. He should have been like, "You got your little pussy right there." I mean, that might have been a step too far. They might have been thrown off the air back in '96. But he should have. I'm like, look at. And then he's got his two kids there. Also, he's got on an outfit. Bret Hart has got on an outfit that makes him look like he's got the Canadian tuxedo on. He's got jeans,
but.
A blue shirt and flip flops, and I'm like,
okay. Awesome. But now, while we say this, it's authentic to who Brad is.
No, it really is,
and that's why it worked.
It works, but
polar opposite.
A lot of ammunition for
polar Austin. Opposite of what Austin is.
Yeah, he's got his children there, and you can see Austin. He's got his hands like
the mannerisms, like he's like. Like the matter is, like it was hilarious.
Answer him. I love that. Like nobody was doing that. Nobody was doing that kind of stuff that Austin was doing.
You have to watch if you guys never watched a split segment. You have to watch it. It's hard to do it justice because there's so much that you have to visually see. The mannerisms that Austin does as Bret Hart is talking. There is never a moment where Austin isn't reacting to Bret Hart, which is extremely important in a split screen segment. He is reacting to everything Bret does. And when he's talking, you see Bret's face like.
October 28th, 1996 is the episode we're talking about. And it's just. Also, we forgot to talk about when Bret comes back, because we hinted at it. You know, Brian Pillman, sees him. You know, when Bret says, "I'm coming back," Austin does the little turnaround, as we talked about, and just looks at him. What happens on the next Superstars? We get the term Pillmanized because Austin Pillmanizes Pillman. He puts the chair and breaks his leg.
And the way let's focus on the split screen segment a little bit more.
I know, but we jumped before that, so that happens. So the October 28, 1996 episodes is what we're doing with the split screen. And it's just amazing. I mean,
here's what I like about it. Right.
It's real.
Austin reacts to everything Bret does. But more importantly, Bret supports Austin, and a very important thing at this time, Austin is saying that he's the best wrestler in the world and that he's the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be. And he is literally calling himself the best in the world. This is a theme that we would see in wrestling nowadays with Punk and Danielson.
But the way Austin would say it, he's like, "There ain't nobody gonna tell me I ain't the best wrestler in the world." Like, he wouldn't say it like Punk would say, like, the best in the
world. Well, no, because like Punk is somebody different, and that's what makes Punk great. He does his thing because he's different. This is the thing, like when we sometimes talk about, man, this guy needs to act more like Austin, we're not saying he needs to copy Austin.
Yeah, that's sure.
He needs to copy the psychology of what Austin does.
And just getting back to Russo for a minute, he pushed Sharkboy to do that stupid crap where he would just rip off Stone Cold. And I,
because it's what he knows. It's,
I know, the but only I don't thing that ever worked it, for him. It made them look so low rent. I don't.
Everything that they show. Did was low rent. Yeah, it's TNA.
Yeah, you're right.
TNA is literally, if you check in the dictionary for TNA, it will say low rent.
It's right next to the Dumont Network.
But another thing great is he's saying he's the best wrestler in the world, and Brett says, "That's why I want to wrestle you. Because you are the best wrestler in the world."
And let's not forget, when Brett comes back, he puts over Austin saying, "I want to wrestle the guy who I think is the best wrestler
in the world."
They didn't have to say that. If this was Sean, he never would have done that. Like, that's Brett being a professional, giving Austin a boost in the eyes of Bret Hart fans who might not be paying attention to what Austin's doing right now, and saying, "And this guy's for real. Look at him as the best."
And even if you didn't like Bret, you would still take it serious because of where he was positioned. Exactly. It's no different than, even if you don't like John Cena, you were like, wow, when Brock just squashed him at SummerSlam.
Yeah.
I mean,
they undid it by, you know.
Okay, yeah, but I'm saying for the moment.
Yeah. As usual, WWE does something great, and then let's screw it up within a month's time. We'll do the rematch. I mean, yeah, it would have been great. We would be talking about it. It's still a great moment, but when you look at it in context, it's, yeah, they screwed it up.
And also,
when he came back to have that rematch.
Before the match in Survivor Series, right? They had a match in South Africa.
Yeah, and it's a good match.
It's a good match. You know, one little key that I noticed, when he fought Brett in the South Africa match.
He didn't beat him with the sharpshooter.
No, but the way he sold for Brett was a little different in Survivor Series compared to the Africa match, because
he oversold.
And I also noticed the opening of both matches are kind of similar. And one difference was that when Bret Hart would push him, you know, when he's in the corner and he'd push him in South Africa, he would actually sell it and do a back bump.
Yeah.
And then come back up. And in Survivor Series, he didn't. He just got mildly pushed and stayed standing.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was Brett telling him, you know, from Madison Square Garden, I want you to look a little stronger.
Knowing Brett and how much detail goes into his matches, I'm sure Brett went over the match and was like, because one, both matches, we're jumping ahead here again, but he doesn't beat him with the sharpshooter.
No.
Neither one. So, I mean, and that has to be decided. He barely beats him.
And there was also a story involved in that he was a little rusty.
Yeah. When we get to Survivor Series, we're jumping ahead. I can't wait to talk about that. But let's finish with the split screen thing.
Yeah.
I mean, just the way he's looking at him, the way he's doing it. And then there's a part where he says, I'm gonna beat your ass. And there's a part where Brett tries to say, and he says, you know, if Austin thinks he's gonna beat my pauses like that ass. So it's like he's looking for the okay from Vince. Like, are you sure I can say this? I gotta say this at this time. Brett and Austin have become the biggest program in WWF. Like, Sid and Sean are like, just,
which, who cares? Put it in context. Think about this. The Sid and Sean feud at the time was the title feud, but more importantly, it was like what, a 2-year program that started in 95?
It was supposed to be Vader and and Sean, but they didn't like each other. So
yeah, but now that you're doing Sid, you put it in the context that, you know, they started this program really before WrestleMania 11 when he was the bodyguard, and then, you know, yeah, they like five power bombs the next night. So they literally had this as a long-term program that had two big stars.
I mean, they saw it as a long-term program, but no, we're not getting
the point. The point being, they were positioned to be way bigger of a feud, but it could not compete. Nobody cared. Nobody cared about that match in Survivor Series. I mean, okay, I'm not gonna say nobody. Sid had a lot of support, but that Austin and Bret Hart, the promo segments, the black and white promo segments.
Now at this time, had they done the first black and white one where Austin's like pink and black tights? You're coming.
What back. The hell is that?
What the hell? You're
black and white.
Yeah.
Dogs barking. And
it's great. You can.
And a lot of the scenes from that video were used in the Titantron for Austin going forward.
Why not? That's exactly Austin. I mean, he's got like a tire iron. He's like breaking shit.
I'm gonna take 7 years of frustration out on your ass.
And then he says, "You're coming back to defend the legacy." Stone Cold's gonna so great.
It's like you lost to Shawn Michaels, the boy toy. And then he says, "I'm not no sexy boy."
I don't think it's like the Cause Stone Cold Setso video where he's like, "If you thought you came here for some dancing, and it's like you bought that wrong damn video."
But like what I love in the very end.
Oh God, so good.
You could finally go home to your family because you lost to a real man. He's not just doing a shot at Bret. He is literally going after the two top. That's how you do a promo when you're up and coming. You go for the top guys and only the top guys. Right there in that promo, he was cutting a promo on Bret, but he was also setting himself up for Shawn. Even then, and this is 96, they don't really have a real feud till maybe a little bit middle of 97 and in 98. And he already had this in mind. Now, mind you, he also mentioned Shawn in the Austin 316 promo, which is also a very important thing because he was going after British Bulldog and Shawn because they were the main event.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He always goes. When Stone Cold gets the shot, you're looking at the next WWF champ. And he says,
on the list. The
bottom line.
Because you're all on the list, and that's Stone Cold's list.
And that's Stone Cold's list, and I'm fixing to run through every one of you.
Now, tell me what promo you remember from last week. Tell me what promo you remember from wrestling last week. Exactly. That tells you everything. And we still know the promo that was, 20-something years ago?
Well, no, wait, 20, let's try and remember. Yeah,
oh my God, we're so old. Oh,
can
shit.
We remember the? Can we remember?
Jesus.
Let me see if I can remember the Eddie Kingston.
Bro, that's 25 years ago.
Yeah. Okay.
Damn.
Okay. All right. Nobody cares about that.
Damn. Damn. That just.
That
hurt.
But the. So he does the. Yeah, he.
So old.
Kingston promo. Do you remember any lines from the Kingston promo? With Punk?
Shit.
I mean, it was good, but I'm trying to.
It was good, but I can't.
Why is it? Why can't remember any?
Because I.
Could it be also, we also have watched that promo, I don't know how many times, the Austin promo.
No, so I don't think that's what it is. I don't think that's what it is. Because here's a question. Do you think you're going to remember the Kingston promo better in a week from now or less?
Maybe they showed highlights of it.
No. The problem is the Austin 316 promo is a promo you could literally give a college course on how to build yourself from here to here. have a goal. What's his goal? To be in the main event. What does that mean? What's the main event right now? Sean and British Bulldog. First two names that I'm going to mention. Why? Because that's the main event. That's where I want to be.
Yeah.
Talk about a list of something that you plan on doing. That way the fan gets engaged and invested in something that comes out of this promo. And what it is, the list. What does that mean? That guy's got to go after this guy and after this guy sooner or later. And I'm invested to see it happen.
And you bring that guy out. You bring that guy out. And you bring that guy out on next week's Raw with no entrance.
It's what I'm saying. CM Punk is another guy. Like the Punk promo in the first dance, you could do a similar kind of class because he does the same thing.
But
he
picks,
okay, I want this guy. Boom. Okay, we're going to target this guy.
But can you quote verbatim anything in that promo? I can't really remember anything in that one either.
I would honestly rather take the pipe bomb promo for that because because there's a clear goal being the WWE Championship, and you could do a parallel with the Austin 316 promo in that sense. You're putting this on top. You're going after Cena. You're targeting that. You're also kind of targeting Triple H and Vince McMahon. So that those are other feuds going forward.
One of the things also, though, that I don't think gets discussed enough about Austin's promos and why we remember it is the cadence of the way he talks. It's very
lax.
It's almost Shakespearean. Is it just it the way he finishes a sentence and he goes on to the next sentence? I think that has something to do with it too.
It's that the you remember the verbiage. The verbiage is very lax. It's words normally used by normal people that it is very easy to remember. That's a problem with WWE's promos right now.
But one of the things that, like, when we're doing our, like,
is Austin, there any right? word Austin says in his promo that you need a dictionary to research?
No, yeah, that's true. But when we, you know, talk about Austin, we do his, you know, we're doing the, you know, the Austin impression. We're doing his cadence of how he says it. That's what's missing. None of those guys in Raw or SmackDown or anybody has their own cadence. The Rock has a very specific cadence. Ric Flair has a very specific cadence. Hulk Hogan has a cadence. You know, Punk. That's what we're noticing. Punk. Danielson, not really.
No.
But that's what we're remembering. Like one of my favorite promos, you know, do I think you can beat my ass? Hell no. Do I think you can beat my ass? Why, hell yeah. You know, he's talking.
You know what else I like? And now that we're talking about promos, you remember when Gorilla Monsoon says, "You're out of control. You're damn right."
And I ain't give a damn about it. And then he's like, "I got a bunch. You call yourself the gorilla. I got, you know, that, you know, we remember it because why can't we remember? Like, does anyone really remember Shawn Michaels promos? No.
Well, here's the thing, right? At the time,
you remember that
I was a Shawn guy. I like Shawn more than Brett because Shawn's style was more cutting edge than Brett's.
But do you remember? Give me a Shawn
Michaels. No, I'm getting to a point.
Okay.
But with the benefit of hindsight now, honestly, I honestly remember more Bret Hart stuff and definitely matches, but even promos, mainly because I associate them with Austin and that's really what I remember. But the point is, I don't remember no Shawn. Well, I remember one Shawn and Austin promo in 98, which we will talk about, and that will probably be an episode, one of my favorite Austin segments of all time. And it's another thing.
The confrontation.
Yes.
Right? Okay, we'll get to that.
To me, that's how Hangman Page needs to act.
Don't give away the gold.
No. But see, that's what my promo is doing. I'm giving you things to look forward to. Yes. We're going to talk about this. We're going to talk about that. We're going to get more in depth with this. And that'll come in due time.
But that's something that needs to be restated. I think that's something that is not gotten talked about enough about a top guy is they each have their own cadence that you can replicate. Ricky Steamboat, he sucked on promos. What was his cadence?
Here's the thing. He did not suck on promos. He was effective with what he tried to do. He was a baby face, and his promos got over as a baby.
They got over, but they're not.
That's literally the whole point of a promo is to get over. This is something that Dave talks about that with me watching like Bruno Sammartino promos and whatnot. I have to agree.
Yeah,
I watch a Bruno promo and I'm like, God, this is some white meat bullshit. And the same thing with Ricky Steamboat, but it got over. So
it got over, but
Bruno, it's like Bret Hart.
Bruno, once again, he has a certain way of speaking that you remember.
And it translated well in that era. But sometimes we have to remember, sometimes promos don't work if you watch it from a different era. I would say that is especially true with some 80s promos and definitely anything in the 70s and 60s.
Well, look at Hogan. You know, Hogan's promos were over because he has his specific cadence. Look at Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone. They have a certain way of speaking.
Also intensity. Hogan had a lot of intensity in his promos. And you know, we could say what we want about Sid and Ultimate Warrior, about their promos never making any sense and whatever, but it had a lot of intensity and it got over.
Yeah, you can do it.
Sid Vicious. Oh my God. Sid Vicious is literally, he's literally saying nonsense. I don't even understand what the fuck this motherfucker is trying to say.
I know, like Sid will be like, I don't know.
But you see the sweat? You see the sweat?
Yeah.
This guy looks like he's about to kill somebody.
There's something unique that you can grasp onto because only he's doing it. And I think that's what I'm trying to say is that the top guys have something about them that no one else can do except for them.
Well, that's what makes you a star, because if somebody else is doing it, then you're not unique. You don't stand out. What do you do? It's like Austin when he spoke about talking to Vince McMahon, saying, and I believe it was around September, me watching. I think it was around that timeline. I think you said the same thing.
96 we're talking about?
Yeah. Okay. That the conversation where he's saying, you got the Undertaker here. He's 7 feet. And you're cutting my promo time. You got to give me what I do best. I'm not 7 feet. Let me talk. Let me get myself over.
Yeah. I think it might have been even before that. I'm starting maybe. To think it might have been even in July. Maybe right after
the
King
of the Ring. But the point is, he knew what he can do that nobody else can do wasn't in his presentation, his angles, and his promo ability.
This is intense.
He knew. Yes, but you can't do that if you're just doing matches all the time.
No,
there's only so much you can get over in match quality alone.
And that's why I feel like when you see the superstar stuff and he grabs the mic and he's just like, hey, wait,
I'm gonna put it to you like this,
son.
I'm gonna put it to you like this, right? Danielson is one of the greatest wrestlers in the world, if not the greatest.
Yeah.
When did he start getting over?
When he had the yes.
That yes, no hug thing with Kane.
Yeah.
When he started talking, despite him never having a reputation as being a talker. He was already a great wrestler by 2004, 2003.
He wasn't bad in ROH when he was, you know, the champion.
He was not in the level that you needed to be a top talker in WWE. He's not like the greatest talker, but he's a really good talker now compared to.
He has his moments.
He's a really good talker to what he does.
When he was when he did the vegan thing with the belt and stuff.
Yeah.
Those were some of his best promos.
Yeah.
I thought. And they don't play them or do anything with them.
But the point is, there's all, like, as great as he was, without that ability to talk, the promo to connect, you can't go past a certain level. And Austin knew this. Yeah. And had to have the conversation with Vince that he did, that a lot of guys should have with Vince now.
Yeah, but what does Austin say? He says you got to have that come to Jesus moment with Vince. And, you know, you got to be like, you know, you got to talk to the, as he would say, the old man. And, you know,
but you know what's the problem? The
Zach
problem
Ryder
is,
never did that. And he says that in his promos, or in some of his interviews. He said, the biggest mistake I made was not having a relationship with Vince in any way.
But
guess
what?
Because they're all scared of him.
But guess what? Bray Wyatt had a relationship with Vince.
Yeah, no, it doesn't always work out. Let's
and now they talk about having attitude issues. Why? Because he had that come to Jesus moment, and Vince didn't like it. That's the problem. That the guys that do have that meeting doesn't always go the right way, and then you get this problematic attachment.
Wyatt reminds me a lot of the character that in the Prestige, Borden, where he's like, he's got things thought up so well, and so, you know, he's so articulate and figured out exactly how he wants his character to be perceived. And then he's got this company that just completely takes everything down a notch. It's like he's got it all figured out. And he made two characters. I thought he was done after Bray Wyatt. He reinvented himself and made himself once again another top guy, and they screwed that up too. That tells me that guy is good. As you most guys barely would get a chance at that. Anyways, that has nothing to do with Austin. Let's move on to the gun angle. Let's talk about the gun. Now, the gun angle. What do you think of this? Let's talk about it.
Man, I don't think people will really understand how much in school we talked about this angle after it happened. Like, you never saw no fucking gun in wrestling. I mean, you barely saw guns on TV.
But the way he pulls it out, he's like, I'm going to get this Glock here, and I'm going to kill. He pulls it out.
It's the fact that he fucking pulled that out and loaded it. Like, yeah. That's what really.
And it didn't look like a fake gun.
It was not
a real gun.
This is the difference between Brian Pillman Jr. and Brian Pillman. Brian Pillman Jr. would have a BB gun.
Who?
Brian Pillman had a real Glock, Arn Anderson style.
Although now he's done an interview and he says he's never carried a Glock. I'm gonna have to see next time I see him working out. I'm gonna be like, you got the Glock on you?
Do you believe that though?
No, I think he's probably trying to save face. Yeah, oh yeah, I believe.
Come on, bro. There's a reason you were called the enforcer.
Yeah, there's no reason.
It wasn't for your conversationalist abilities.
Jim Cornette had a gun on him when he would travel. I mean, come on. Maybe Sting. Sting.
You're the enforcer. You're called the enforcer.
I don't think Flair had the enforcer, so he didn't need
that. Yeah, that's my point. Who you thought was carrying Flair's gun?
He's got two. Got two Glocks. Anyways, just the way though they shot it, and the way they, and then him beating up the two jobber guys who like look like such pathetic pieces of crap. Also, he's got an ECW Pillman shirt on as he's beating them up. I noticed that when Austin does the invasion, he's got an ECW Pillman shirt on as he's beating the shit out of them, and he's throwing him in the pool. And everything, and they look, and the way he beat them up, it looked like a fight. in some ways, you know.
It was great.
It reminded me of like Sonny and Godfather, except for
I liked about it too. Like, okay, so they cut in, and when Austin is breaking in, he breaks the glass,
and you hear her screaming.
It was great. But here's the thing, man. Brian Pillman has such commitment. Like, you really think he might? Like, there is no way. Because I remember, I believe Cops actually thought it was real, and they started going over there and whatever. Like, think about this.
Yeah.
There's a section of wrestlers, not fans, wrestlers that thought there's a good chance he might actually shoot Austin just to prove a point. Because that's how Brian was.
Yeah. It's such a good angle, though. The way they film it and cut the black, it was like, it looked real. Like, they would never do it like that. Here, if they did it
okay,
today,
but didn't they say that the cut was legitimate?
I don't know. Was it?
I thought they said that USA actually cut it.
It doesn't look like that. That looks like a cut that was on their end. Is it just because I'm the sound effect and everything that's coming from the audio of them? If it was USA, they would cut to black. They're not going to cut to another sound. So I don't believe that. You know, I bet USA could have called them and been like, you better, you know, do something. Maybe. About this. They could have done something like that, but it looks like it was post-produced. And plus, it looks like it's a tape. It wasn't really fucking live. They did that at a house and filmed it and made it look like it was live, like they do a lot of it. But let's be honest, if they did that today, you would have like, it would be like the Triple H when he invaded Randy Orton's home. They would have like a million people that they'd have cameramen that you would see on camera.
I mean, that's what they were trying to do. They were trying to do Austin and Pillman and failed.
Yeah, it sucks. It did not look real. They failed. Fake. It was comedy. I failed.
It failed like Jack Swagger.
I failed. We got to find that drop. I failed. I failed. Oh, God, that was so bad. I remember this. That was actually, that had a nice, good start to it. And then they did that, and I was like, what the hell is this? This is fake. Also, the way because they had such shitty cameras then, WWF at the time, it made it look real. It looked like an episode of like Cops or something, the way they did it. And just the screaming of Melanie, like that sounded like real screaming. It didn't sound.
Bethany,
there you go. Life was not kind to her.
Jesus, man. If there was ever an advertisement to stay away from meth, just see a before and after picture.
I mean, she looked really nice. And then you see her now, and I'm like, oh, my God.
It's literally like a ghoul took her soul.
Ghoulies?
Jesus, like, yeah.
Oh, my God. Cool. It really does. Anyways, so the next week, though, they don't mention it at all. And they've got to get to Bret Hart anyways. But it's like they only got 2 weeks. I think it's like another week and they're at Bret.
Yeah, they're in the match.
It's kind of why I don't know why they. I mean, he's in the middle of the Bret Hart segment. It's like, why are we doing Pillman right now? Wait till after. He doesn't do anything afterwards anyways. But at that time, they just wanted to kill. They wanted to find a way to beat WCW. They were so desperate that they were like, oh, let's throw out a gun thing. But the way they did it, it looked real. And the way they would do it today, it would never look real. Actually, if they did it today, they would cut to a million different angles. Like, they cut to an angle that no one would ever, like.
The gun
like
would look super fake.
Like, when they did the thing where Braun Strowman rose from the dead of the garbage truck, and they're cutting to inside the limo. Or that.
Like, if you couldn't be any faker.
Or how about the one where Teddy Long is in the limo, and Taker's in there.
Hello, Teddy.
And then
you see his face, like.
Yeah, he says, yeah. And then we see multiple camera angles inside the limo of it swarming with smoke. It's like, that doesn't make any goddamn sense.
So fake.
It's so bad. And his reaction was so fake. And I'm like, that's post-produced. And that's what you went with. Like, they could have done a million other things and they went with that. That would be like if they did, you know, Austin when he, knocked the car off of with Triple H. If they cut to inside the limo with Triple H or something like that, or they cut to like, actually, no, they couldn't do that because then it would reveal it was fake.
You know what's another thing that I liked about the Bret and Austin match is something they used to do a lot back then. The semi-main event would be a number one contenders match for the title.
Yeah. And I love Austin in that promo. Yeah, all right, so let's get to Survivor Series. Wait, do we have anything else?
Nope.
What else? Okay, he does that match, and then he goes into the locker room, and he's like threatening to go in there. And you hear Vince like, go in there. He's like, you'd like me to do that, huh? You'd like me to go in there. You know what? You're going to have to pay to see Stone Cold Steve Austin in there. You know, which is great. That's a great heel line.
What a heel. Like, because you're a greedy little promoter.
You're going to pay. You're going to have to pay to see Stone Cold in there. So then, all right, so now we're at Survivor Series 96. And at the end, they say, Stone Cold, what do you think about the stipulation? Like, I don't really give a damn about no stipulations. All I know is I promised to give Bret Hart make his life a living hell, you know. And I love that entrance way in MSG with the short entrance way where they come out where the basketball guys would come through.
Yeah.
It gave it such a different look. Always knew that was an MSG show.
Always knew it because they would make like a nice little set to complement the small alleyway.
Except for 2020, they decided to go full out and do a huge set. Yeah. But I always think of SummerSlam 98. I think
Royal Rumble
96, Royal Rumble 2000 with the car on the back.
Yeah,
of it and everything. The highway. SummerSlam.
SummerSlam.
Highway to Hell. That was the gate. It's like
and the glass, the glass, the glass entrance. Thing. In my opinion, the greatest Austin entrance.
I love that. The problem was they were like so pressed for time. Like before Undertaker comes out, you can hear them going, go. We gotta get in there. They couldn't even do a video package, they didn't have time. You know, whereas nowadays they would probably cut the match and do the, Taker and Austin. They ain't gonna.
That's because Triple H and The Rock went over.
Yeah, they told him that they told him you need to go home, and they just looked at him like, "Fuck you, we're not doing it."
It's a different era, era.
Well, that then they couldn't go over. You know, nowadays you just ask for more time and you'd be fine.
So, what you thought of the match?
I think this match is great. And one of my favorite spots in it is when Austin hits the superplex on there off the top. Mm-hmm. And instead of going for the cover, they both can't get up. So they both bring their legs up to try and cover the other guy. And I was like, that's great. That's a spot people should be doing because it makes sense. They can't get up to do to actually cover him, but it can do that. Also, I love when he's like punching Austin into the guardrail. It's almost shades of what's going to happen in WrestleMania 13. And Bret and Austin, their punches and everything are so crisp.
So crisp. So like
it's like Eddie Guerrero when he wrestles. It's like there's just this almost relaxing feeling of watching them because they're so damn good.
See, I would say the opposite. When I watch Austin, is not relaxing. It's the anxiety I get of watching a real fight. I was just watching UFC on MSG this Saturday, and it's that same feeling. You're really glued to the screen. You feel that there's an intensity of a real fight happening, and that puts you and commits you even more to the match. There are 3 points. And that match that really stand out for me personally, or four. The entrance.
Yeah.
When Stone Cold's coming out,
you can hear the Austin.
He's looking straight at the camera.
Yeah, he does that like
straight at the camera with a sarcastic grin.
I love it.
And it's just like that is star power. It's all in the eyes.
Little things that he's doing that most wrestlers just don't get. It's those little things. Kenny Omega needs to like study that.
You know, because like
when Austin, he goes out, there's nothing.
You know what's funny? Austin always says that when you're a star, the cameras will find you. You shouldn't be looking for the camera. Yeah, but this is an occasion.
And when he yeah. did Nebraska, they said, don't try and find the cameras. Let the cameras find you.
And that is so true. But here you could see this is he's not a star yet. He is trying, like by him piercing through the screen, he is really trying to tell you, I am not some jobber that's fighting Bret Hart, losing in a 7-5 minute match, and then you'll never hear about me again. This is just the beginning.
20.
Yeah, minutes. This is just the beginning.
And they had a long match.
And then it goes to my second part, the face-off. When was the last time you ever heard of a semi-main event having like a 2-minute face-off? Only WrestleMania main events at that point had those kind of face-offs.
Oh, you mean at that time period?
Yes. Yeah, at that time, only WrestleMania main events had that kind of face-off.
ECW did Taz and Sabu.
That's different.
Right, okay, different company. Okay, yeah.
Different company this and different company, psychology yes. because the psychology, I have to imagine, because you know that has to be a Brett idea. He believes that there's something here. He doesn't do that with just anybody. Who else he's done that with? Yokozuna? Owen Hart?
You can already see what you know, he didn't beat him with the sharpshooter in the...
That goes into my other point. The other spot, right? The gimmick, he kept getting out of the sharpshooter.
Yeah. I like that.
Meaning that this guy is not just a guy who's talking shit. The story was that he's been paying attention to Brad, been watching all the tape, and he's found out like the counters to the sharpshooter, and that Brett is rusty and isn't able to put it in right yet. You know, which is so great because it protected him and getting that, you know, what a clever finish. You know, he uses the $1 million dream, a move he stopped using. And the second he uses it again, he loses because of it.
He got caught. He got caught. He barely beat him. And I like that story that he told him.
But you know what? It's also the story with that move that he could have kicked out if he just let go of the move. But he didn't want to let go of the move.
That's another thing.
You know, like, I like that. And then the most important thing at the very end, after the match, Bret Hart is, like, kind of there wanting to, like, kind of celebrate. You kind of feel like Bret's, like, wants a handshake or whatever, and Austin's just looking at him and then goes out, and then he's just staring a hole at Bret Hart after the match. And then you hear JR, look at those eyes. This is far from over. Which is such a true statement. Here's and another example of the breadcrumbs that Austin puts in front of you.
Here's the things I liked about the match. One, this is Brett's first match in over a year, supposedly. We don't count.
Technically.
Africa doesn't really count because that wasn't promoted on television. Mm-hmm. So anyway, you can see him sucking wind and barely, that might be... Since it's Brett, it could be by design or it could be...
No, it's by design. He said he's commented on it. He said it was by design. He wanted to look like he almost died and could barely beat him and that he was rusty.
That's what it looked like.
Yeah, that was by design. Also, which another thing, that just talks about the genius of what he was putting into the match. Because those aren't things that a normal fan is going to notice. That is something that you put in because you care about it.
Exactly. Also, the other thing I liked about this match, Austin's offense, all of it is designed to hit his head and his chest to warm him up for when he hits the stunner. Now, which I don't like the only thing I don't like about this match, when he hits the stunner and he doesn't just, you know, pin him. I know that the whole idea is that, you know,
that was a hiccup. I think that was the only hiccup of the match. That was a hiccup. I think they wanted to do something where
he had him beat and he didn't take
it. Yeah, but it didn't come out right. You know, like, I think it would have been better if he would have done the stunner and then that Brett kind of jumps out of the ring.
Yeah, like he rolled out of the ring, or he rolled close to the ropes or something. Then you could have done the foot on the rope thing where, like, he didn't exactly kick out of the stunner. He just
now, you know what?
His foot on the rope.
It would have been better if when he does the stunner and he's trying to get Brett to roll him, Brett rolls the other way to go outside the ring.
They could have done that, but I think you kind of still need that visual pinfall references. I think that adds to it. But I think he should have just got his foot on the rope, because then he doesn't actually kick out of it. He barely beats him.
I don't like that spot. I like that spot sometimes. I just don't feel you should use it in a Bret Hart match, because I think it's so overused in his matches since he has a submission finisher. No. I wouldn't want to do it when the guy does a pinfall as well. Literally done in every Bret Hart match, because that's his finish, is a submission. So somebody's always got to hold the rope. You also got to do it when he's pinning.
It's a good point. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I go back and forth. I got to think about that.
You know why? Because the CM Punk and Cena match, when he does the GTS and Cena rolls out, I thought was a perfect spot. They kind of did it with Darby Allin, but the Cena one was perfect.
Yeah.
I wish they would have done something similar to that with the stunner.
They could have done that.
You know.
I don't know, but I think Brett probably looked at that as like, that's a cheap way to get out of it.
But putting your foot on the rope is a cheap way.
I know, that's my idea. And you're right. He probably didn't want to do that either. I don't know. I'm trying to think why. I mean, it's not too bad, you know, because he did have him beat. He just didn't pin him. He just didn't get the pinfall. He dragged him to the middle of the rope instead of just turning him over.
It didn't feel right. There was a hiccup there.
I might have to listen to the podcast where they talk about that match.
I don't even remember them ever mentioning that spot.
No, I think it was the Edge and Christian podcast. They had Austin and Brett on to talk about the match.
Oh, really?
And discuss it. It might have been 13, but I think they did that one as well.
I want
to
see
that. Was one
it,
of the man. Cool things they did. They were doing interesting. Anyways, I think this match is great. It, you know, it told the story it needed to tell, and it just.
And it wasn't a definitive match. It was a great way to start a feud.
It elevated,
which is
Austin.
Funny. Isn't that funny? Because they weren't even supposed to have the match at WrestleMania 13, but this match obviously was building for a rematch.
Well, I think what was going to happen, because Brett was always going to beat. Did you ever hear about what Brett said the plan was he was going to do? He wanted Shawn in the 13, because he was going to break his ankle and then put him in the sharpshooter. That was how he was going to beat Shawn. So I think he was kind of going heel no matter what. Mm-hmm. And he was the guy he was going to work with was Austin. So he's splitting up the thing to go to Austin the next pay-per-view, because I think they were going to probably still wrestle all throughout the thing. But then they did the change, but Shawn didn't want to do the match. So then we had Taker and Sid, and then we got Austin and Brett, and they came up with the idea of the double turn, which was brilliant.
The greatest set of accidents.
But we'll
that could have
talk
happened.
About that in 97. All right, so let's talk. So anything else to say about this great match in 96? I think this elevates Austin.
It definitely elevates Austin. It's a great way to start a feud. It didn't. One very important thing when you're starting a long feud, the first match shouldn't use finishers. I really believe that. And if you do, mm-hmm. only one guy uses it, and it's to win the match. And that's it. But honestly, I think it's better when you start this way. But not the WWE bullshit 17-minute match and then like a cheap finish at the end. This was not a cheap finish. This was being outsmarted. This was the veteran doing a veteran move and the guy coming up doing a mistake. He could have kicked out by letting the hold go, but he hated Bret Hart so fucking much that he couldn't be logical for 3 seconds. Yeah. He had to keep the hold in.
The only thing that I think would have been interesting about this feud is I think they should have explained a little bit more of why he hates Bret Hart.
About
do you think that, you know, they should have explained why Austin hated Bret more?
No, I think that's a problem.
Yeah,
WWE does a lot, to be honest. Explain, you don't need to over explain stuff. Okay, I don't like you. Why? Because I'm here and I want to be over here and you're over here and I'm not. That's it.
Good point.
He said it, he's on the list. And that's Stone Cold's list. He was just starting to write through all of them.
Oh, don't get started. And that's probably, if it was Jericho, he would be like, yeah, he could have come out and he could have done, Austin could have come out on the list. And I'm like,
you know what I love too? The promo he cuts before the Survivor Series match. Like,
yeah, we talked about it.
Like, the best there is, the best there was, cliches are cliches, and an ass whooping is an ass whooping.
Yeah, it's great. And that's why the New York audience doesn't really boo him.
Oh,
they're
no.
already taken to him. And they're already taken to him. All right, so we're done with Survivor Series 96. So then the next night, Austin is facing Mankind, and he gets attacked by Mankind in the entranceway, and they have like a little brawl or whatever. I don't know. At this point, it kind of feels like he's in a holding pattern. There's really not much to say about this.
I feel that it wasn't even around this time. It's literally after he won the King of the Ring. Every match you see him on Raw is against a main event guy, but it's a guy that Vince still sees above him. So he isn't going to have him beat him, but they're not ready to beat him yet. So you get this dirty finish. Which is fine if you do it every now and then, but it was a pattern, like you said. Shawn, DQ. Taker, DQ. Taker again, DQ. Mankind, DQ.
Well, I thought about it. It's the repetitive matches. This is the problem WWE has today. They just continue to run through the same. That's what I love about Bret. Bret was like, we're not going to run through them.
But see, and the one thing is, that's not a problem when Vince believes in you. The problem is he didn't believe yet. You can tell. Because the fact that he couldn't even beat Mankind, who he didn't really think that much of at this point, told you he still wasn't comfortable yet with Austin in that main event slot.
One thing I've always wanted to know is, like, when did Vince turn the corner on that? Was it, I think it was probably the success of the Austin 316 shirt. I think that was the thing that went,
you know what I say? What do I say? If it don't make money, it don't make sense.
Yeah.
There's one thing that Vince does react to is the merch numbers, rating numbers, and pay-per-view numbers. Survivor Series did well, but that wasn't going to be enough because they were going to attribute that to Bret. But once they started rolling the shirts and saw everybody wearing them, that's when it became undeniable.
Can I say, let me say one more thing. How stupid is it that they actually brought out a guy to Razor Ramon's music and they expected fans to actually react like that was him? Like, oh, if you watch that segment, they actually thought.
And they buried JR's credibility with this shit.
Yeah, because he says on there, I've got the biggest scoop of the year. And it's, and you can see the fan's reaction as the fake Razor comes out. He's got this fake look, like that's not him.
And then they have Kane as Kevin Nash. Oh my God.
So my God,
so bad.
So lame.
It's so frustrating seeing that shit because it's such an insult to your
dentist coming in, bro. We're not gonna make you're not gonna be a dentist anymore. You're gonna be Diesel. Think about it. Think about it, man. You're gonna be Diesel.
See, getting back to Austin, I think around the end of November, beginning of December, you could clearly see Austin's probably number two, number three heel in the company at this point. He's clearly behind Sid and Mankind.
Man, did they run through Taker and Mankind in 96? I feel like that match is on every single, even after he beats him at Survivor Series, it's still like, well, we got to get back to Taker and Man. I'm like, what?
You know, I don't remember them having so many fucking rematches in 96.
But watch
Jesus.
Like, it's oh the same God. Shit we see today.
So bad. And literally the same finish over and over and over again.
Yeah.
You know, and we're still in 96, right? Right after Survivor Series, they do another pay-per-view. In your house, it's time. Which is funny because that's Vader's catchphrase, but Vader wasn't even in the
pay-per-view. He was supposed to be the guy that beat him at Survivor. You could see that's how he was supposed to beat him.
But see,
no reason to take that stupid thing.
Stone Cold, right? Just semi-main event of Survivor Series in Madison Square Garden in your home territory, New York. He's in a dark match.
But to be fair,
in your house,
but to be
against
fair,
Goldust, house, don't say Sean. Sean was champion in main event at WrestleMania. He was a star.
But that's not the reason. In your houses, we're only fucking 2 hours. That's
I know
the problem, which is
but that's okay. Let's look at the card of this in your house, right?
I have the card
in your house. It's
it always sounds so lame. In your house, what is it? Sounds like such a Vince thing. It's
okay.
In your house.
This is the card, right? Here's a card. The Rock versus Salvatore Sincere. Disqualification, 6 minutes.
Oh, wait, who? Salvatore.
Sincere. This is a
Salvatore
jobber.
He sounds like a stereotypical Italian guy.
Flash Funk versus Al Snow, Leaf Cassidy. You telling me Austin couldn't be in that position?
Dude, this pay-per-view looks like shit.
Owen Hart and Bret Hart versus fake Razor and Diesel. You telling
British
me Austin
Bulldog.
Can't be in this
you mean
in this
British
position?
Bulldog. It's British Bulldog, not Bret Hart.
I said Bret Hart?
Yeah, you said Bret Hart.
British yeah, it should have been Bret Hart. It would have been a better match. Mark Merrill defeats Triple H by count out 13 minutes. You telling me Austin can't take this position? The Undertaker versus the Executioner, who is really Terry Gordy.
I know.
In an Armageddon rules match, which is just a Texas death match.
Yeah, what the? Yo, is that what? I've never watched this pay-per-view. I'm going to be honest with you.
Okay, so.
Sid versus Bret Hart, which is the only interesting thing on here, is they teased the deception between
them. So, I didn't know Terry Gordy was the Executioner. I won't say anything bad about it then, but
he wasn't in a good place. This was not the Terry Gordy of yesterday.
Yeah, I get it, but let's say it's an Undertaker match, whatever. That position is fine. But Mark Merrill, Triple H, Owen Hart and British Bulldog and fake Razor and Diesel, Flash Funk and Al Snow, The Rock and Salvatore Sincere, and you telling me you got to put Austin in the fucking dark match against Goldust? Why is that not? Why is that match not even on the pay-per-view? You might as well have had it on the pay-per-view.
Well, one, all right, one, Stone Cold Steve Austin and Goldust are both heels at this time, so they probably don't want them on the same show because they're just they got nothing else to throw out. So okay. That's probably why it's dark.
Okay, now so here's an idea. Why don't you just have Austin beat Al Snow and replace Flash Funk?
I don't know. I don't know why they did. I don't know why. This show looks like shit.
I know. It's just to me that struck out as really weird that you didn't put the guy in your semi-main event who's still up and coming on the pay-per-view. You would think he would want more exposure. You would want to expose him a little more, but whatever.
And isn't the next night? This is when was it Austin and Vader are having a match, and Brett comes out. He puts the sharpshooter on him.
Yeah,
and he lays it in on him like
the thing. Yeah,
like that. That's the
idea. I love the interferences they would do with each other. So real. Great. All of them are so realistic.
Oh yeah, we didn't talk about the other thing when Austin came out and what was it? He hit Bret Hart and then he hits Bulldog and they were gonna start. Actually, that's what they should have done. They should have done Bulldog versus Austin.
Yeah, there you go. See, I'm right.
I don't know why they didn't do. I don't know, dude. I don't know why they're stupid. I don't know why Austin is even. Austin should be in the main now.
The interference angles Brad and Austin are doing are great. So realistic. They always catch the interference late, which I like because in real life, if somebody was coming and interfering, you wouldn't have a camera already ready. You get what I'm saying?
You wouldn't have a guy come out and a blue raincoat like I'm watching right now.
Like, you remember when The Shield came out the first time?
Yeah, I remember originally they were going to have batons and actual shields.
But if you remember, they didn't show them coming out immediately. They did it after they already came in, which is how you should shoot it. And that's how every interference angle that Austin and Brett had in December.
Well, here's the same problem. Shit. WWE always cuts to that, you know, that angle when you know interference is going to come in where you can see the ring and you can see the entranceway there. And you always know that's the problem. They use the same angles. So you get associated. If you're smart, you can see that like, oh, that's
really okay. They're getting ready for an entrance.
You could see where why they're doing that. Whereas,
yeah, but Vince knows that he knows that. And you know, he knows it because he sometimes deviates.
Yeah, with The Shield, they just dragged him out of the ring, and then they brought the camera to him, and you're right.
Which shows that he does know this stuff. He just refuses to acknowledge it unless it's a guy he really likes.
Yeah. All right, anything else to say about Austin's 96? I think at this point, he's already Steve Austin, and you should have already put the title on him.
I say by December 96, Austin was looking really good. Sable was starting to get over. Merrill was starting to really be a jobber. Why do I mention this? Because the first person that took a stunner in King of the Ring was Mark Merrill. And the first guy that got a guaranteed contract was Mark Merrill. And I, for some reason, have always had him in comparison with Austin. Because there was that parallel there.
You know what they wanted? They wanted to do his Johnny B. Bad gimmick, which was him because he looked like Little Richard.
And yeah, he was that. Athletic, though. He did some good
moves. Yeah, he was good. No, he's not bad. That's why
but his stuck girl with was a bigger man. Star than him, though.
But that's he should have stuck with the Wild Man gimmick because at least it gave him person. When he becomes a boxer, he becomes a joke of nobody
cares. He was gonna be a joke regardless because but if he was the Wild Man, what made him a joke is that Sable was a bigger star than him, and that was true as the Wild Man.
But you can really see it when he starts becoming the boxer. He comes out like with a stupid do-rag on. He looks like
I'm gonna tell you, I just finished watching those December shows. He already was starting to lose reactions. I remember seeing a segment where he's walking Sable to I think for that.
I didn't pay attention to Mark Romero because I don't give a fuck about Mark.
It's because I drew that parallel because he's the first guy that took the stunner in King of the Ring.
Yeah.
You know, and you just see Sable getting the reaction and you see him so mad about it. And then Austin comes out and whoops his ass.
How many times they had no idea what to do with Sonny? She's in like 50 different
interview guys. Segments,
the smoking commentaries. She's in commentary. They've got her teased with The Rock. They've got her teased with this. She's bringing in Bulbo. I'm like, what is this? They had no idea what to do with her.
She's talented, though. She was really good. She
is talented, but like, this is not the way to use her.
No, but they didn't know how to use women back then. They did it. Honestly, like, Sable was the first chick. Sable in China, to me, and Wendy Richter were the first women they ever really used well. And Miss Elizabeth.
Yeah.
I don't really think they've used that many good women at that point. I just remember
China, people that, like, didn't even watch wrestling would be like, they knew her. What is that? That's how big of a star China was.
Yeah.
People don't realize that. Like she was like everyone knew. She was up there with Austin. I'd say she's over Sable because like
people
everyone knew her.
People don't know.
Guys but, outside of wrestling knew Sable, but it wasn't like women knew China, men knew China, children knew China. It was kind of amazing how.
Yeah, like people need to put this in context. In 98, right? The biggest star was Stone Cold. Yep. No surprise.
Really?
But in terms of ratings, the ones right behind was Sable and China. Yeah. And the only and that's how Triple H started to say, oh, he's a draw, because he was in segments with China and he's like, yeah, look at me, I'm in these segments. No, it's because of China.
Look at, and it was because of China. My heater is getting more over than I am.
Because she was more unique than he was. He was just another big blonde guy.
So anyways, what else do you want to say about 96? Let's put a bottom line on this.
So we just talked about Sable started getting over, who to me was the female side of the Attitude Era to Austin. I do associate Sable and Austin a lot. I'm not going to lie. When I think of the Attitude Era, some people won't understand this, but when I think of the Attitude Era, I think of Austin and I think of a Sable poster in leather, or that shiny patent in leather, whatever thing
Sable Unleashed.
Yeah, but like a poster, which poster in Stone video. Cold. That to me, that was WWF 1998. Sable, not The Rock, not The Undertaker, not the Sable in Stone Cold.
Rock
and
doesn't Sable really become a star
wearing and Sable wearing Stone Cold shit. To sell Austin merch, which was great.
Rock wasn't a big star really till 99. He was a jobber in 99.
That's what, like, he was getting there by mid 98. He was getting there, but honestly, I don't think he was fully there till 2000.
Yeah,
I don't even think when he was main eventing and was a champion in 99, I don't think he found it yet. I think he found it during Mankind, the Rock and Sock Connection. I think that's when he really started to get really confident with those very long promos that they love to do.
You're seeing a pattern here. This Rock and Sock. Hell no. You know, it's kind of interesting that this.
The problem is, right, that WWE likes to do these long 10-minute promo segments. And not everybody's going to be good at talking for 10 minutes. And The Rock was good, but it's hard to do The Rock stick at first the way he did it in these long ass interview segments. But with I felt like with the Rock and Sock Connection, he was really doing a lot of ad lib with Mick Foley. And because when he would do these back and forth with Austin, he always lost.
Yeah.
You know, but this was he was getting the reactions he wanted. Yeah. I felt like he really improved.
All right, you're giving the gold away. Stop that. We're going to talk about, we will talk about
breadcrumbs. Breadcrumbs.
We will come to those. What do you let's put a bottom line on 96? Because we're going to 97 next.
Yes.
And that's the pivotal, I think the most pivotal point in, as they would say, the dawn of the Attitude Era.
So by the end of 96, putting this in context again, Gold Dust gets probably the best pop he ever got by saying he wasn't queer. This is the era that we were in.
Did he say, I'm not queer or I'm not gay?
Yeah, I'm not queer. That was the exact word. I'm not queer. And it was such a huge pop. Like, it was hilarious.
Was he in Texas?
But going back to Brett, after the Sid pay-per-view, the Sid match, and in conjunction with interferences from Austin, he's being advertised as more aggressive and showing more heelish tendencies. Like, he beat Fake Razor in a December Raw by the Sharpshooter, and he kept the move in like for 10 seconds, which is a very heel behavior.
He's got till 5.
And Shawn Michaels, the guy they had on top, was high as fuck.
Yes, too.
So now we're gonna go to 97 next time, and show how Stone Cold single-handedly
saved
the company.
So with that, let's say the new phrase, the truth
shall set you free.